These guys know how to connect with you about Boston sports.
Call and give us your take and then get off the phone.
Kilger and Maz on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Yeah, I mean, that's, like I've said many times before, that's what we sign up for. This is what we prepare for all year. Chance to win a championship, and that's where we're at right now. So we're all excited, ready to go.
All right, here we go. Chris Sale, tonight's starter, World Series Game 1 on the docket. We've also had here on Felger Maz a lot of people call in, and really a borderline outpouring of, where has Greg Bedard been from Boston Sports Journal? Where's our dose of Bedard every 2 hours or 2 hours every week? Because we've skipped him the last couple because of the baseball. So
they're like a cult.
It's unbelievable. It's like, do you tell them to email us? Because I get these emails about
it. I did today.
Oh, my God. So, okay, well, that worked. So
love it.
This is what we're doing. Bedard, who's known for football, does the best football job in the city. If you are one of these Bedard Moonies, these Bedard hippies, who have to talk football with Bedard, this is your hour to do it.
The Bedardites.
Are they like the JBJ hippies?
Yes, exactly. The Bedard hippies. 617-779-0985. This hour is your chance to do it. It's going to be a lot of baseball today. We're going to do baseball with Bedard because he's been covering this series. He went to Houston, so we're going to have him give us his thoughts on the baseball as well. But we'll do a little bit of football this hour because Bedard is here and you want him. We're also going to talk to Chris Melgruso coming up in just about 15 minutes.
Nice.
All right, so stay tuned for that.
Doggy joins us live.
Bedard, from your time covering the Sox, what's your take on this series?
My take is, I just think the Red Sox are a team of destiny. I think that, and I said this midway through the season, I think there was a series in Philadelphia where Cora made this decision to pinch hit.
But Brandon Brock Phillips.
It wasn't that one. It was Brock Holt. Like, I think Porcello was pitching a gem. He decided to pinch hit for Porcello. Holt goes up, pinch hits, hits a home run. I was like, that's it. I give up. I'm cuckoo for Cora. The guy could do no wrong. It's just continued. It's been even better in the playoffs. And just being around this team in the last two series, there's this confidence. There's this cockiness. There's just, okay, they're just ballsy.
As someone who is analytical, yep, definitely on the football side, and I think you would appreciate it in other sports, as someone who's matchup-driven and analytic-driven and X-and-O-driven, I ask you for an analysis of the series, and you just sort of said, boo, they're on a roll.
Like, which is what Murray did.
I mean, don't you think that's what everyone's doing?
Yes.
Is that a little dangerous, Mass?
Yes, sure. It is dangerous. It's absolutely dangerous, and I told you that yesterday I started to dig in a little bit more on the series, and you really start to get into it because, you know, obviously we're on the air on Friday. There's aftermath and winning, blah, 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 blah. But as we get closer to the Dodgers, I start to dig in and look at the matchups. And you know what? And I mean this sincerely. It's not a great matchup for the Red Sox. The Yankees, and I'm not telling you it's a horrible one. They can absolutely win the series. But the Dodgers, I mean, the Astros and the Yankees matched up well for the Red Sox. Those
Why?
Are right-handed lineups that you were able to attack on the outside part of the plate. You have a right-handed bullpen. All of it. It just lined up right for the Red Sox. They were able to attack on that side of the plate. The Dodgers are going to be the complete opposite. And they're going to throw a ton of lefties at you. So, again, go back to the Yankee series, and you say, okay, well, who are you going to see? Severino, right-handed. Tanaka, right-handed. Like, now, happened that the Yankees threw two lefties, too, but I would argue that happened a lot of ways as, like, a right-hander in some ways. But in any case, that aside, the Astros, three right-handers in their rotation. So I just think the Dodgers really are lined up to exploit whatever weaknesses you have.
If you look at the X's and O's, Greg, is it closer than we're giving it credit for?
Yeah, I definitely think so. I think that the Dodgers, to me, because you just don't know what you're going to get out of Sale beyond tonight. I think tonight is Chris Sale. He knows that it's the World Series. It's Clayton Kershaw on the mound. However he needs to do it, he's going to gut it out. He's going to have a good performance that at least you're going to have a chance to win the game. For me, it comes down to things like something that I thought was discounted a lot until after the series with the Astros is some of the inside information that the Red Sox have had on these teams. Like, the Astros, not only did you have Cora, but you had Craig Bjornsson, the bullpen coach, who knew those guys backwards and forwards, and they completely just took the bat out of the hands of Bregman and other guys. And I think in this series, you know, I know Sean McAdam has written it for us. Other people have written it. Tim Hyers, the hitting coach for the Red Sox, was the hitting coach for the Dodgers previously. So he knows all the holes in these guys, and I think a lot of guys in this Dodgers lineup can be pitched to, and I think the Red Sox have been flawless in their execution to this point.
What is your concern with the Red Sox?
My concern is the starting pitching, that Sale doesn't have it tonight, that his health issues have been, you know, really underplayed or at least hidden by the Red Sox, and that, you know, maybe David Price reversed to what he was before, you know, this gem, that he's had this long layoff now. Now maybe he's not as sharp and he doesn't get out of the, you know, third inning. Those are my concerns, but, you know, I think they've gotten the bullpen wired to this point. I love Brazier. That guy has just been incredible in the postseason. I like the way that Cora sort of puts it together with, you know, Porcello will come out of the pen or Evaldi. Like, he knows what he's doing.
Okay.
And so,
I mean, the more I think about this thing, Mike, I think it's going 6 or 7. Like, and look, that's not a stretch, but in and of itself, that should tell you plenty. Like, 6, you know, to go 6 means it's 3-2 going into 6, right? And then, you know, who knows? The way people are acting cavalierly about this series to me is so wrong.
Much more on the Red Sox, most of the day on the Red Sox, but we want to get in Patriots with Greg because you want it. Greg, I asked you about the concerns about the Red Sox going into this series. You told me what they were going to do well, so you're all in on the Sox. You're not even looking at it critically, which is fine, fair. You're swept up in it. You and Murray can...
Welcome to my world, Greg.
There you go.
Yep. These two ghouls want to give the Dodgers a chance, but we know better.
Do you have real concerns on the Patriots?
I do. I mean, look, and I wrote this, but, you know, look, the defense, it's week 7, okay? And they are on pace to have the worst points allowed under Bill Belichick by like 63 points. Even if they throw a shutout against the Bills on Monday night, they're still on pace to have the most points allowed under Belichick.
Is that right?
Yes.
If they shut out the Bills after, is that, so you said this is week 7 or week 8?
This is week 7.
It's going into week 8.
So going to week
halfway through the season,
they will be on pace to give up the most points in the Belichick.
Yeah, this isn't like week 3 saying like, okay, right, well, they're on pace to allow 500 points. No, this is after week 8, after the halfway point of the season. This team is on pace to be the worst points allowed. And, you know, how many years have we heard? It's not about yards; it's about points.
So what is it?
See, that's the thing. I don't understand what's going on with this team by now. Every other season, okay, weeks 3, 4, whatever, they're not good. We got it. We don't pay attention to it. It's just continued. I mean, other than the Dolphins game, I mean, every other season what happens is the Patriots struggle in the beginning part, then they have a game like the Dolphins game where they allow 7 points and 170 yards, and then that's it. Like last year, they went 8 weeks and they gave up an average of 11 points. 95, I think it was 93 points in like 8 games. They just gave up 95 points in 3 games. There's just, I don't know what it is, but something is wrong with that defense because this is the same team, basically, plus Hightower, plus Claiborne, that was out there last year, and they haven't been good. I mean, they've had stretches, but it's 75-yard touchdowns here. It's, you know, quarterback running 40 yards all over the field for an untouched touchdown, running another 39 yards when he stops and just keeps going. I mean, this is not the typical Patriots defense, and it's a veteran group. This stuff should not be happening. I don't understand what's going on.
So beyond the talent, because a lot of us say, well, look, their linebacking core lacks talent. Are you seeing execution and communication breakdowns?
Well, that's the deal. I mean, like the fourth down conversion to Trey Burton. Jonathan Jones and Patrick Chung both jump the same guy and leave Trey Burton wide open. Like, I can understand that if you're running through a bunch of different guys or guys haven't been here or there's injury problems. They haven't had any injury problems. Juwan Bentley's the only guy, and he was...
A rookie.
Rookie, is he starter, is he not, whatever. That's the only injury. Other than that, they're healthy. They're veteran. And the thing is like, I just keep going back to that Dolphins game because they executed so well. You're like, okay, here we go. Now they're going to get it. Then they revert right back. To me,
go.
We heard after that Miami game that a lot of players were saying, we met a lot on our own, we're being accountable to each other, all that stuff. Is not enough of that stuff going on week to week? That's the only reason that I can give that this team is not executing better defensively.
That internally they're not putting in that work or that focus.
I mean, if they're doing it for one game and it was so good, are they not doing it the other weeks? That's my question.
Okay, quickly, Pat Peterson, in or out, 30 seconds.
No. I want linebacker help or something like that. They don't need another corner. They have plenty of corners. They just need to execute better. And plus, you'd have to do a lot of different accounting things. I don't like it.
Okay, give me a cocktail napkin, and I'll figure out the accounting for you. But the real money, I don't know what kind of player Pat Peterson is for that real money. We'll discuss that, your Patriots concerns, all of your Red Sox thoughts, after we talk to Chris Mad Dog Russo right after this.
This is Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
I hate jokes. We're not taking jokes.
That joke blew.
It's Felger and Mass, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
We talk about the Indians. We talk about the Astros. New York, I think we're up there with them.
I mean, besides the friggin' best record in baseball.
Way, way, way out of here. A grand slam for the X-Man. Getaway center. Gardner back, turning around. Oh, he did it. He knocked it out of here for a granny.
Martinez just jumped all over it. The straightaway center field.
Changed a lot of stuff up, you know, here the first 2.5 years, and, you know, to be able to get back to the pitch that, you know, Boston signed, you know, that's it's about time.
Right now, trying to end the eighth, and he does it with a flare. He struck him out. Uh-oh. There's another one.
No.
High deep drive, left field to the monster seats. It's off the light standard. First third home run of the game.
It's hard to see the guy that hit 3 home runs yesterday. He has to play.
Bounced up the middle. And fly ball left field, that's deep. Back it goes. It is gone. Mookie Betts has hit for the cycle. Flair slicing in left field. It drops in, and that's gonna do it. The Red Sox have ripped it off. Mitch Moreland delivers the game winner. Down he goes, strike three, and the Red Sox win for the 108th time.
That ball's ripped down the right field line. That is a fair ball, home run, and the cycle for Brock Holt. Bouncing ball, going to be a tough play. Nunez gloves, throws, and in time for the out. The Red Sox will celebrate.
A lot of people gave up on us after losing game two. We showed up yesterday, and we did an outstanding job, and tonight we had our plan. We have a complete team. We're very versatile. We count on everybody, and it was a great team victory.
Bradley Jr., a high fly ball.
A strikeout for Eovaldi as Bregman is now 0-for-4. Second time they've struck him out tonight. Dropped down a little through the riser at 102.
I trust the guy.
This isn't about me. You know, I understand the narratives. I get that. You know, I deserve those narratives. But this is bigger than David Price. This isn't about me. This is about the Boston Red Sox.
And a swing and a miss. It's his ninth strikeout for David Price. And I'm sure David Price has mountains and mountains of crow to dish out. And his first career postseason win sends the Red Sox to the World Series.
Now, a lot of people are proud of what supposedly I'm doing. And like I tell everybody, I'm proud of the group. You know, this is a group that they have high expectations. And the goal is to win the World Series.
Executive producer Jimmy Stewart putting that together. Red Sox in 2018, now here at the World Series. I'm jealous. It's a cool series. When your team's in it, it's awesome. It's as good as it gets, honestly.
I mean, look, it's a, you know, traditional matchup, right? You had two traditional franchises here. It's good stuff. I hope it lives up to the hype, and I feel like it's gonna.
I think it should. I don't know. The Dodgers, I mean, there's two ways to look at it. The Dodgers are just perpetual chokers, and they're not going to give you a series, or they've been knocking at the door so long that they're due, and they've learned from their mistakes and are more equipped now to win this kind of series because they haven't in the past. You know, Greg, there's two ways to look at it, right? There's the purely analytic way, which I am sorry. As Maz said, and I started talking about yesterday, A lot of these pitching matchups favor the Dodgers. If you're looking purely at numbers and matchups and left-right splits and all that sort of stuff, a lot of them favor the Dodgers. But then there's a whole nother thing that I think you can't quantify, which is, what does Kershaw look like after coming up short so many times? And has he figured it out? As a person, as a competitor, like, you can't put that in a machine and spit that out to me. What's David Price going to look like now? Has he gotten over that hump and he now knows how to pitch in these situations and we're all set with David Price? Or does he revert? And how much do you put into confidence, momentum, the way they're playing? I mean, no one's playing better than the Red Sox, but you can't spit that into a computer and give me a left-right matchup on that. So I sort of think there's really two ways to look at that. So for more on this, let's go to Chris Mad Dog Russo, one of the foremost, maybe the foremost voice on baseball on the national scene, left on the national scene from Sirius XM Radio and the MLB Network. He joins us now. Chris, how you doing?
Hello there, boys. How are you today? Good to be on.
What's up, Doug? We are thrilled to have you. So just give us your thoughts on the series. What's your lead thought on this series?
Lead thought on this series is I think it's going to be competitive. I think you got a historic pitching matchup tonight because you think about the histories of game ones. I mean, this is Gibson, McClain. This is Spahn and Ford. You know, this is on that level. Koufax and Ford in 63. I mean, you got Sale and Kershaw to start a series. That's as good as it gets. I do think the Red Sox will win. I think the Red Sox will go six games. I wouldn't be stunned if it won a seventh game. Dodgers are resourceful. The DH won't bother them. They have Kemp they can put there. They got a lot. It's almost like the Dodgers have two teams with so many interchangeable parts. And I do have a better closer. So that's the one thing. I have much more confidence in Jansen than I would in Kimball. But I do think the Red Sox, you know, they're relentless offensively. They got a home field. You got to figure maybe Price found a little something the other day in Houston. You know, the American League, I've said it all year that the NL was playing for second place. The Red Sox did beat two 100-win teams to get here. You like where they are right now. So I would take the Red Sox. I would take them in six. I think the Dodgers will be competitive, but I will take the Red Sox to win this World Series in six games.
Chris, it feels to me like in this market especially, people are way too comfortable and confident. Because I look at it on paper, and I've been digging in more in the last couple of days. And I dig in on paper, and I see a lot of tough matchups for the Red Sox with the left-right. What has been like nationally? Are people picking the Red Sox like they are here and like you are?
Yeah, and I think most people are picking the Red Sox, Tony, and I agree. I think the Red Sox fan. The one thing about the Dodgers that are interesting, the Dodgers can pitch. Let's assume Kershaw's going to be okay. We know he's a little up and down, but let's say he's okay. I'm telling you right now, Buehler is not good. Buehler has got tremendous stuff. He, of course, I know of all these pitch great too, but he's got great stuff. You know, Hill knows his way around a big game. And Ryu is due for a good performance after that bad couple starts against Milwaukee. Throw in the fact, let's be honest, there's no comparison between Jansen and Kimball. I don't want to hear about tipping pitches. Kimball against the Yankees, when he walked the ballpark, he wasn't tipping pitches. So I don't want to hear that about tipping pitches. So the Dodgers are formidable. There's no doubt about it. They have got a lot of different guys. They were here last year. They're not going to be intimidated by the environment. The Dodgers also have the other thing, Tony, that you do like. Very rarely do they go into any series as sort of the underdog. I mean, they're the Dodgers, $250 million payroll, Dodger Stadium, Magic Johnson. I mean, you know, they very rarely walk into a spot where, you know, they're not necessarily supposed to win. And I think that will help them a little bit. So from that standpoint, the Dodgers will give the Red Sox everything they have. But I'm going to be fair. The Red Sox are the best team over 162. They rampaged through the Yankees and Houston, two things I did not think was going to happen. And I didn't have the Red Sox in either series. So I think the relentless lineup, the idea that the bottom of the order hit, including Bradley, you know, Price, you got to figure Sale's all right. Of all these, been tremendous. You got to like the Red Sox. To be fair, you got to like the Red Sox to win the series. But anybody in Boston, and remember, I see the Dodgers all the time, NL West, San Francisco, the Giants. Anybody in this town who thinks this is going to be easy, that, you know, they're going to lay down like Houston did, they're nuts.
What's the key to the series, Chris? Sorry, Chris. What's the key to the series?
For what team?
For either. For the Dodgers. If the Dodgers pull the upset, it's because they do what?
If the Dodgers pull the upset, they're going to get great starting pitching. You know, they did not get great starting pitching against Milwaukee. Ryu had two bad starts. Kershaw stunk in game one. If the Dodgers get the starting pitching that they had against Atlanta and they had in the month of September when they caught Colorado, they will be good pitching stops, good innings. They will be a pain in the neck. They will be dead. They have, you think about it. If I asked you right now, who would you prefer to have in game one? I think with Thales' sickness, and who knows, you got to take Kershaw. If I asked you who you'd rather have in game two, Price or Ryu, you'd probably take Price, but that's no guarantee. He's 1-10 in the postseason. And if I asked you who you'd want in game three, I am taking Buehler. Now, the Red Sox fan might be confident. I'm taking Buehler, and Porcello and Rich Hill to me are a wash. So if you look at, and there's no debate about the closer. None. Zero. Kimbrel, I do not trust Kimbrel. If I was a Red Sox fan, I'd be biting my fingernails if he comes into the game. He has been awful. So I would, the Dodgers pitching is very good. So, I mean, I think they can win. They get, you know, Vegas only made the Red Sox a slight favorite. They're minus 135 in Vegas. That's not a huge favorite for a team that's at home field and has, you know, won 108 games. So they think it's going to be relatively close, and I can see that.
Chris, if there's anyone in Boston that still thinks Clayton Kershaw's a choker, what do you say to him?
Well, game five against Milwaukee, he was as good as he gets. I don't know how you can call a guy a choker. I mean, he's had his bad starts in the postseason. He was bad in game five against Houston. That can happen with that lineup. He was wonderful in game one against the Astros. He pitched tremendously, 103-degree day. I was there. He, you know, certainly was very good against Milwaukee, a game he had to have in game five at two games apiece. Kershaw is probably going to do this. He'll probably give you, or the Dodgers, one so-so start. That might be tonight. And he'll probably give you one great start. That's probably what he's going to do. He's not going to be great both days. He'll be great once and so-so the second. That would be my prediction on Kershaw. I think Buehler in two games is going to be very good. I think Ryu will be much better. And I think, obviously, you know, I think Rich Hill will give you five good innings. The Dodgers, folks, the Dodgers can win this series. This is not, they got a million players. He's got a big bench. He's got a big closer. And he's got Kershaw, Buehler, Ryu, and Hill. They got to the World Series last year. This team is not a cakewalk. I know everybody seems to think it is. This team is a good team here. Okay. I mean, and they beat Milwaukee on a road in game seven. That's not easy. This is a good baseball team.
Chris, Mad Dog Russo, SiriusXM Radio, and the MLB Network. In the minute we have left, Dog, I know how you feel about length of game, the times that these games go to, that whole piece. We all feel the same way. I think we all agree with you. The question is the league going to do anything about it?
That's a good question. I wish I had the answer for you. It's a major problem. 9:09 last week, game four, went to 2:25. The next night, you guys, I'm sure you watched in Boston. I didn't. I fell asleep, top of the eighth, 1:25 in the morning. With game four and Benintendi's catch. It's a major issue. I'm not sure what the solution is. A new network would get it started. Love to see NBC get baseball in 2 years. Who knows?
How do you feel about the pitch clock, Chris?
I know the pitch clock. I think it's the relievers. I think it's the constant going back and forth to get relief pitchers. Seven or eight changes per game. That's dead time. The discussions on the mound, stepping out of the batter's box. I mean, good hitters fouling 9,000 pitches off. I mean, all right, pitch clock probably help a little bit. But, I mean, the Dodger game that week went 5 hours and 5 minutes. I know it's 13 innings, but, geez, the Red Sox game that day, 4 hours and 33 minutes. 4 hours and 33 minutes for a ball game that was five. I mean, geez, you can fly to the West Coast in that time. You can go to Europe. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. I mean, and then they wonder why my 16-year-old didn't see it. And he grows up an NBA fan. And they wonder. They say, well, hold on now. They wonder why little Colin Russo says that. Who won? He doesn't know anything about it. He's not staying up at 2 o'clock in the morning. And why not a day game once in a while? Oh. You can't have a day game in the World Series?
I'm with you. Chris, thanks so much for taking the time. We really appreciate it. Have a good time here in Boston.
You guys.
See you, Chris.
All right, John. Thanks, Tom.
Hey, Chris,
yes.
Mad Dog Russo, thank you for taking the time. We will get to your thoughts. We have three up, three down with Bedard. He's still here. You Bedard Moonies, we're still going to get to you. Three up, three down from Sunday in Chicago. We'll take your football calls. We'll take your Red Sox calls after Murray's update, in which he will tell you, guess who suddenly sucks? Who suddenly sucks, Murray? We'll get to this right now.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
No. I just don't know what to say anymore.
Wrong. Sorry. Sorry. Wrong. Sorry. Sorry.
It's Felger and Maz.
They could use a good ass kicking.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
Now, it's time for 3-Up.
He throws it left for Glock. He makes the catch over two defenders.
And 3-Down.
A poor throw intercepted by Tyrann Mathieu.
With Greg Bedard of BostonSportsJournal.com. 3-Up.
Launch downfield, throw into the end zone. With Smith there, Rowe as well. That pass is going to be intercepted by Gilmore.
3-Down.
Absolute blown coverage right here. Poor tackling on the outside.
Here on Felger and Maz.
All right, you Bedard Moonies. You want your football? Here it is. 3-Up, 3-Down. In the next segment, I promise we'll get to your calls. Three studs, three duds from Sunday's win in Chicago. Who is your number one star for the Patriots? Greg and Maz. Maz plays along.
James White. The guy's just the MVP of the team to this point. He's awesome. And even his running late in the game, four-minute drill, like, oh, you know, no Sony Michelle. I don't know what the Patriots are going to do. And then they go out and they execute the four-minute drive almost to perfection.
Yeah, let's not waste too much time. It was White again. Every week, he's one or two. Every single week. What a stud this guy. He's dynamite.
Second star, Greggy?
Trent Brown. He's been on the down list a few times.
No, he was.
I mean, he wasn't flawless. Had some a few issues in the running game, but really good pass blocking. It would have been nice if Khalil Mack was healthy, but he wasn't.
Chris Hogan, believe it or not. I thought Hogan was good in this game. And on that one drive in particular, there would have been, what, the third quarter maybe? Where I thought, you know, he became a part of that passing offense. Really, it felt like to me for the first time all year long.
Third star.
Trey Flowers. Yeah, I had him for six pressures in this game. Did a good job in the running game. You know, it went healthy. He's the defensive MVP.
I'm going to go Josh Gordon, believe it or not. All things considered, he made a couple of big plays. And no Gronk on the field. They needed somebody to give him something there. And I thought Gordon was a factor in that game. It's still not perfect, which is why I have him at number three. But to me, he's becoming a bigger part of what they're doing.
He definitely is. But can I say something on Josh
Please.
Gordon? I mean, other than his four plays, he's having a really tough time out there. Run blocking, he had some issues in this game. There are times, I had him down three times in this game, where Brady's looking for him to break off his route against zone coverage, and he's not doing one time. And this leads to a bigger discussion where Brady, just to get through this game with the numbskulls that he had out there, I mean, it was tough for him in this game. So I give Brady a lot of credit. I don't know why they're not playing guys more like Dorsett and Hogan more, and just going out there with the guys, you know. I guess they're just trying to fit these guys in. But, I mean, at one point he had Patterson and Gordon both running down the seam, and they're supposed to run hooks against zone. And Brady's holding the ball waiting for one of them to turn around, and they don't. And then he has to scramble and, like, throw the ball away. I mean, there was a lot of that stuff going on against the Bears. And, look, they have to force-feed Gordon. They have to get him up to speed. So this is what they have to do. But a lot of it has not been good.
Okay, three down. Number one dud for the Patriots.
Jonathan Jones really struggled in coverage, tackling. He just had a tough time. And you could tell the secondary, I don't think the Patriots know at all, outside of Stephon Gilmore, who's going to be where by the end of the season. I think we talked about it a couple weeks ago where I said, I'm going to play the kids. And they've started to play the kids. And I think they are still, it's middle of the season, and they are still trying to figure out what they have in the secondary.
I have a question for you on that as it pertains to Gilmore. But before that, to me, Patrick Chung. I thought Chung sucked in this game. It looked to me like he was chasing all day long out there, for crying out loud. And he's not the only one. Whether he was on, I thought he was on Taylor Gabriel at one point. And I went, holy crap. Like, talk about a mismatch. And then other times it was Burton. Either way, I felt like he was running behind people all day long.
Second down.
Adrian Claiborne. He had the sack, but a lot of these pressures and going up the field is him just being over-aggressive and not being disciplined.
You mean
in the
a lot
rush.
Of these scrambles?
Yeah. It's just, you know, you expect more out of a guy who's been in the league for that long.
See, you read my mind. I was going to ask you how their edge containment was. Because it felt like garbage in this game. I went J.C. Jackson. How many penalties did that guy get? Is that a record?
Several. I don't have the number.
I mean, is it possible to
it's
get three?
A little handsy. What do you want?
Is it possible to get three penalties in three plays? Is that what it was? It was something like that.
Third down there, Greg.
Patterson, for his stuff on offense. Yes, he had the kick return. that stupid high five plus the fumble. No.
I wanted to go Ryan Allen, but I can't pick on the punter again. Sony Michel. Sony Michel. I don't care if they rip your leg off. Hold on to the ball. I don't care if they rip your leg off and feed it to you. Hold on to the ball.
Quickly, what's your Gilmore question?
So my Gilmore question is, you say when the Patriots don't know who the secondary guys are going to be, how much of the confusion in the secondary is a result of the fact that Gilmore can only play man-to-man?
It's not him. Nope.
But you understand what I'm asking?
Yes, I understand what you're asking, but it's not him. It's just, I don't know what the deal is with this defense. These guys should be so much better. They should be, what they did against Miami, they should be doing that every week. And I don't know why they're not doing it. And something stinks on the defensive side of the ball. And it's not just a talent issue. And I don't want to hear this stuff about, oh, nobody plays defense in the NFL. No. This team can, you think Bill Belichick takes that into account when he watches the film?
Not really.
No.
Okay, your thoughts on the Patriots with Greg Bedard on the Red Sox. We get to your phones, I promise, right after these words for our long commercial-free segment.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and Maz. Felger and Maz.
I love it.
You were right, Maz.
I just keep loving it more and more.
Bore my listeners to death.
I finally feel alive.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Sounds good.
Trubisky from the pistol is Cohen. Quarterback extending the hands and taking the snap. Dropping back. Pressured by Claiborne and Flowers. Yeah. Rolling right. Circling backward at the 30. Trubisky pulls up at the 25.
Hit him.
He runs left to the 20. 15-10. Trubisky to the 5. Yeah, he's going to score.
This clown.
Tiptoeing into the end zone. It's a touchdown for Chicago.
That's sad. This is sad right here. That should never happen. You got him at 3rd and 7, down inside the 10. Quarterback runs 20 yards back and then finds a caravan down the left sideline.
Got to be kidding me on that.
5 plays, 24 yards after the fumble by Patterson.
See, this is the problem on man coverage, because you got to stick with your guy.
Man.
There is nobody there. He could walk in.
Okay, worst defensive play, maybe. Arguably the worst defensive play on a day of bad defense and a season of bad defense for the Patriots. And Bedard says it's beyond what's going on in the league. Your thoughts with Bedard on the Patriots, and obviously we're taking your thoughts on the Red Sox. Go ahead, Guy in Boston, lead us off today.
Yes, I would like to tell Greg Bedard why the Patriots' defense sucks. Coaching their defense is like training a donkey to run in the Kentucky Derby. Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome, Guy. I think he's implying they lack some speed and athleticism.
I don't think it's that. I mean, you know, look, do I expect them to be exposed against teams like the Chiefs or, say, the Rams if they play them in the Super Bowl, or the Eagles? In this? Yes, I expect that. But I expect middling offenses, and Mitch Tannehill on Sunday was god-awful. I expect them, like, against the real Tannehill, I expect that level of performance. And you look at, like, the DVOA from Football Outsiders or the offenses that they played. The Dolphins have actually were one of the better ones that they had played, and they completely shut them down. It's not always about talent. I mean, it is if you execute well and you still get beat, but this team is just not executing well. And by this time, they're starting to roll and put it together. And now they're going in the other direction. I have never seen this before from a Patriots defense.
Michael and Melrose on Sony Michel. Go ahead, Michael.
Hey, guys. I just want to say I think Sony Michel sucks when he's on the field or in the hospital. But at what point do we start blaming Belichick for not only picking Michel too early, but for using our first two picks of guys with serious injury history?
Okay. Well, you know, one of the reasons I don't like running backs in the first round is their injury history. So on one hand, you can say the Michel thing's bad luck. But on the other, I can say, well, those guys get hurt. Those guys get hurt. And, you know, I would say it's really not unlucky if it was a recurrence of what happened to him in college and over the summer, but it doesn't sound quite like it is. It's the same knee, but might be a different ligament. Either way, I just think that position is so interchangeable and so injury prone, I would never take it up high. But how big of a loss is Sony Michel? Do they need to go out and get a running back?
Yeah, they need to get some sort of running back, a Mike Gillisley type. I'm not looking for anything. I mean, like,
you're talking waiver wire, street pickup.
Yeah. I mean, because, look, this running back is not going to make the difference in this team.
Thank you.
You know, I'm not going to rip Sony Michel because he's fine and he's a good player and he's getting better every week and all that stuff. You know, and he can't control where he was drafted. But Sony Michel was no key to anything that was going on with the Patriots offense. I've heard people say stuff like, well, he's keyed. He's the reason they could use play action. The Patriots always use play action.
He's opened up the passing game?
Yeah. I mean, you look at the first couple plays in this game, like he was going 15 yards. It was so well scripted by McDaniels. He was going 15 yards before getting touched. And if you actually look at the analytics from this game, the other running backs all had better yards after contact, as far as per attempt, than Sony Michel. And
I'm sorry.
Kenyon Barner had a couple of really good runs. Like, watch the run when they got pinned back after the Edelman muff punt. The first two runs that he had, 7, 6 yards, both of them are really good runs and, you know, somewhat better than what Michelle's done.
I'm sorry, Greg. What did you say about the... Go back a second. What did you say
just
about
clip
the
it, Jimmy. Just hold the file. Just hold the sound.
Yeah, the analytics showed what?
What did
on
I
the
say?
Running
no,
back?
No, sorry, no, sorry, no. You're slow. We have the tape, Maz. Jason and Easton. I mean, Greg's not quick enough to follow along with
no,
that.
No, no, no.
Jason and Easton, what do you got for us?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Greg, you just made a couple points about how the Patriots don't know what they have in their secondary, but you also don't want them to go get Patrick Peterson. I mean, I'm not saying they should give up the farm to go get him, but he's in his prime. He's got term left on his deal. Why not go get another lockdown commodity and have him and Gilmore in your secondary? And then that might spur more coverage sacks or things like that, make the linebackers look a little bit better.
Why are you a no on Peterson?
I just don't think it's a talent problem in the Patriots secondary.
Really?
Yeah, I think that, you know, Rowe, when he's healthy, is fine. I think that J.C. Jackson, to me, he's the guy that by the end of the year, by the time the playoffs roll around, he's starting at the second cornerback spot because he just needs experience and he needs to get with the program.
So if it's not talent, what is it, Greg?
I just think it's when it comes to this team, when they have issues like this, I always say they got to coach them up. They got to coach out of this. And the Patriots do. To this point, they haven't, but I think they will at this point. Whatever the reason is, they're not on point. They don't have their stuff together. And I can't say that's coaching or the guy's not putting in the work because I don't know what's going on behind the scenes, but I just know this isn't right. Not to have Devin McCourty and Daron Harmon and Patrick John and Stephen Gilmore in the secondary and Jonathan Jones, who have been around. It should not look like this.
Okay. Peterson, to me, feels like there's no shot of it happening. There's too much real money and too much real capital out the door. I mean, you're going to have to give up a second, first-round pick for him?
Well, that's the thing.
And then pay him $5 million this year in real money? Forget the cap. They can figure that out. I just feel like if Peterson's going to be on his second team, his value's already diminished, and they don't pay top dollar for those guys.
I don't see much chance of it because the only way they can make it work salary cap wise, unless they trade like Devin McCourty or Dante Hightower to the Cardinals.
Or Cordell Patterson would help.
A little bit, but there's still a lot of money that they're going to have to be. You're going to ask the Cardinals to basically pay Peterson a signing bonus so that Peterson's only making like $500,000 when they come here.
Yeah.
And then his future cap money is no cheap amount. I mean, you've already paid Gilmore. What? The Patriots are going to have $30 million invested at the cornerback position.
Take the money out of it. Would you do it?
Yeah, the talent's
sure.
there. Sure.
No question,
course,
right?
Yes,
I mean, to me, like, if you get Patrick Peterson and put him with Gilmore,
nice.
Now we're talking.
You're in business.
Now we're talking.
And he helps your special teams. He helps everything. I think
he's a terrific player.
Tremendous. What do we got here? Jared in Fitchburg. Go ahead, Jared, on the Pats.
Hi. Yes, I was wondering, do you think the Patriots are going to win the Super Bowl this year?
Okay. Can I ask that a different way? All these problems with the Patriots are real. I'm with you, Greg.
Yeah.
Where does the challenge come from? It's a different way to look at it. You know, is there someone out there to expose them for their flaws?
Well, there's only three teams that you can see knocking off the Patriots, or at least coming in Gillette or whatever. The Chiefs, obviously, and they would have to get healthy on defense. But if you have to go to KC, that's a problem. The Ravens, who they're very good defensively. They're better offensively. You know, we'll see. And then the Steelers, if they can ever get their act together, Le'Veon Bell comes back. But how much confidence have I ever had in Mike Tomlin? Like zero. So, you know, if you're asking me right now, I'd still pick the Patriots to go to the Super Bowl, just like I did before the season.
What about San Diego?
No, I need to see more from them. They've been too much of a flash in the pan, up and down team.
Okay, here's the final football call. Bedard's only going to do an hour today. Brian in Vermont, what do you got, Brian?
Hey, Felger. Yeah, I was watching the game last Sunday, and Patriots are known as a passing team through the years, and that's how they tend to win. And they've been going with the running game lately. And
Brian, you're taking too long. He says, the comment line says the Patriots are running the ball too much. I'm an anti-running backist. You know, I don't care for the running game. I don't think they're running it enough, frankly. I think they've been very productive running the ball, and it's been whatever running back they've handed it to, whether it's been Michelle or Barner or White, you name it. You look at their yards per carry averages, they're all roughly the same. They're all getting the same production because I think the line is blocking it. I think the ground game has been there. So this is one of the few times you'll hear me really not complain about the amount that they're running it. In fact, don't be afraid of Kenyon Barner. Keep handing him the ball because the yards are there.
I agree with you, and I think the offensive line has done a really good job. I think that Josh McDaniels and Dante Scarnecchia have done a great job scheming it up against the individual teams that they've come against, and I think that could continue. I mean, look, they have a lot of resources put into this offensive line, you know, in terms of draft picks, and Shaq Mason got an extension and all that stuff. They should use it, and I think that they will.
Okay, final word, real concerns about the defense. Real concerns. We've been over it all hour, but just put a capper on it there, Bedard.
The capper is this team, the defense is getting worse when it should be getting better. And I've never seen this before in a recent Patriots defense, and I don't know what to make of it. They're better than what they've shown, but you know, all of a sudden we're in week 8 now, and we're still talking about the defense where they should be slowly getting better. It's not happening, and that I don't know what to make out of it, and it scares me a little bit.
Greg, thanks for coming in. We appreciate it.
All right, thanks, guys.
See you, big boy.
Okay, 1 hour of the big boy. Are you Bedard hippie satisfied? The Bedard Mooney Club out there. You got are you fine? You got your X's and O's. We did your three up, your three down. We got the chart out. We got the clipboard. Okay? He talked about some offensive linemen. He talked about some stuff you can't see on TV. Are you satisfied? We mostly Red Sox the rest of the way. Why is Drew Pomerantz on this team, and how do we feel about it? Why is he on this team? How do we feel about it? Sale versus Kershaw. How do you feel about it? To your thoughts and ours on this, right after Big Jim Murray's 90-second update, no commercials.
This is Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.